This is the Talking Split Podcast.
Welcome, coaches, to the Talking Split Podcast. I am Rob Calder, the Coach Development Coordinator at Basketball Victoria. You can, of course, follow along on our socials via Twitter and Instagram with the handle Talking Split. I just realised it's not Twitter anymore. It is X. This is how regularly I check in on the app, it turns out. Of course, we would always appreciate the ratings and reviews on the various Spotify, Apple Podcasts, all those sorts of things. Speaking of podcasts, we do have a guest in today, the person that runs the Basketball Australia Building Better Basketball podcast, Neil Gray. Welcome to the Talking Split podcast, Neil.
Thanks, Rob. It's an honour to be on for the first time. Long-time listener, first-time guest.
Well, if you keep saying it's an honour, you may come back a few more times. It's never been described as that by anyone coming into this. But, I mean, your role is Acting Game Development Manager at Basketball Australia. What does that sort of encompass, just for those out there that may not be familiar in what that looks like?
Yeah,
it's a broad title.
Yeah, it's, I guess, the Acting Game Development Manager part of it is recent. We had a staff member leave due to health reasons, and I've stepped up to take his role until the end of the year, where we'll review the makeup of the department. So my full-time job title is Community Coach Development and Volunteer Manager, which is why we work so closely together. But within the game development department, we have the coach development, we have volunteering, we have officials, we have Aussie Hoops, we touch a little bit on walking basketball, we have some fleeting interactions with 3x3. It's basically, as I like to joke with all the people that say, oh, how many coaches do you look after? Well, I look after about 75% of the coaches in the country, because they are community, they are volunteer, they are in the majority parents. So spend a lot of time creating the content, the coaching courses, working with yourself and your counterparts across the country to support your initiatives and make sure we're trying to educate and support the volunteers that are giving up their time to build better basketball.
That's not a bad little tie-in more than anything else. It's so you're not a basketballer by trade, though. So you've come from a very different background. Do you want to just sort of give us the highlights of that so that we can understand where you're coming from with a lot of this too? Because you're not just bringing basketball knowledge, you're bringing a number of other sports in with you as you come and look at this with a different lens.
Yeah, I've got 100% coaching record in basketball because I've 100% never coached a game. So it's a record that I don't want to lose. I obviously am originally from the UK, Glasgow. I worked in soccer straight out of uni. I worked for Celtic and Kilmarnock and then with West Ham in the English Premier Division, working in their academies, which was for a boy who played soccer growing up, it was a dream come true to work in the Premiership. And I was a decent cricketer growing up and had the opportunity to go to New Zealand as an overseas player, took that and then did all my coaching qualifications over there and got the opportunity to coach at a state level, and then was poached, for want of a better word, by Cricket Victoria to come and work at the MCG, which was another pinch me moment, looking after their coach development and their Pathways program, and got the opportunity to work with the Renegades and the WBBL as well as the women's team. And then did a couple of years with Bulls Victoria. And then during COVID, I worked in the school system in Victoria, in the private school system. And then about 2 years ago now, I came to basketball. So like you say, I've got high performance coaching qualifications in a couple of other sports. And it's the difference between basketball, soccer, cricket is really only about 15%, probably. 85% of coaching has got nothing to do with the sport you're doing, and all about preparation, communication, engagement, everything like that. So I'm hopeful that the messages that I've been able to share have made a difference, and it's really, I think, a good combination that we have at Basketball Australia, where I have all that other sport experience, and then Pete Lonergan's forgotten more about basketball than probably most of us will ever know. So he makes sure that we don't miss out on the X's and O's, and the content really remains key there.
And that's a really big part. I mean, you spoke about working at the MCG. SBC will look like the MCG once the redevelopments have been finalised in that space. But it really is a big part of coaching that I think gets forgotten. And when we talk about it with the podcast in particular on our end, is like, who are we actually pitching this to? And obviously the wider base of the people that would probably listen sort of sit in the middle. Like, it's not necessarily the grassroots volunteer coaches. We certainly have some of those that would listen to the podcast, but we kind of sit maybe at that representative level, and that's not necessarily just Victorian, because we obviously have a number of listeners from other states as well. And the high performance coaches, we don't probably talk at that level too much. But I think we talk a little bit more just to the everyday coach in that space. And that's kind of where we want to be too, because that is the vast majority of people that are looking for help, are looking for assistance, are looking for just something that can make them slightly better in that space. It doesn't necessarily have to be basketball relative, I suppose. It's more about the people, the communication style, the learning styles, those types of things. Is that what you sort of found transferring across from other sports into this?
Yeah, I think firstly to pat you guys on the back, you, Zoe, Bestie, Nathan, as someone that is a basketball coaching rookie, I find the content really accessible as well and understandable. So that speaks to your point. We have, within the coach accreditation pathway, obviously we have Aussie Hoops Community Club, and I was looking at the stats yesterday, and in the last 365 days, we've had, and you just take the total number and divide it by 365, we've had 15 new coaches every single day register to do a community coaching course online. So that just suggests that there is that. That's including Christmas, including every Sunday. That's just shows the demand for just learning and getting better and improving yourself, whether that's because you're an ex-player that just wants to become a better coach, or more likely a parent that's been voluntold that they have to coach. And we do the Learning Together sessions every month with people that have completed one of the coaching courses, and that's one of the things that comes back from them is just the constant need for more information to improve themselves, and where can they find resources, and how can they find information that's both accessible, understandable, and fits within the lifestyle that most of us now live, which is bite-sized, can be consumed on the move, and doesn't require them to give up their time that they need to spend with their families or walking their dog or something like that. So.
Yeah, and it's a tough space because I think, I mean, you sort of joke about the voluntold thing, but it's very real. Like, a lot of our coaches out there at the grassroots level probably didn't necessarily get in it to coach. They probably signed their child up and looked around and it's like, hey, it's probably me or nobody else. And I mean, there's two paths, I suppose, you can go down. There's obviously the formal education, which, you know, the accredited coaching courses, and obviously we're across that. They're fairly accessible to everyone out there. We obviously run a lot of them in Victoria, but there's a number of them going on around the country at the same time. The accredited courses won't make you the world's best coach, but they're not going to make you any worse either. And it doesn't mean that just because you have a certificate now you are competent, capable, those types of things. There is that informal stuff going on the other side of it. And that's probably the part we're going to really talk about today, is the coach mentoring side of things. Like, the informal side of things is just such a great supplement to the accredited courses. Because I am a believer in accreditation. I have to wear that hat for a start, but I am genuinely a believer in it, that you go, you spend some time with other like-minded people, you hear what they've got to say, you hear how they do things, you obviously listen to a presenter that can tailor a little bit of content towards what you're doing. But the coach mentoring side of things is this other side that we haven't really delved into a huge amount. And I know Basketball Australia has been working on a pilot program over this past, we'll call it 8 months now, but going further back than that, can you just give us a little bit of an overview as to what the program is more than anything else?
Yeah, so Sport Australia, as some of your listeners will be aware, have put a lot of extra work into content creation and courses, and again, making them accessible free online. And one of the areas that they wanted to explore was around community coach course mentoring. So really focusing in on those parents and those people that are volunteer coaches. They're not lifers, they're not looking to move into representative or high performance coaching roles. Because one of the big discussions that is often had at Sport Australia things is, oh, we have a coaching churn. And one of the areas that I push back on quite strongly is, I don't think we do have a coaching churn. What we have is the player drop off that all sports have, that when kids get to, boys and girls get to 17, 18, their heads are turned by other things, jobs, the other gender, the opportunity to travel, careers, everything like that. So they stopped playing. So most, nearly 75% of our coaches, their motivation or reason to coach will then stop. So unless they have developed a real passion to continue, their coaching career will then stop. It doesn't make them less of a coach. They don't suddenly go from being coach to not being coach. They just lose their kind of connection to the team, the club, the sport, whatever. So we wanted to, I guess, make sure that those community coaches felt that they were as best supported for that probably 8-year window that they were going to be in it. And we obviously had a large boon of registrations when we moved the community coaching course online and made it free. So we knew we had this captive market who we could offer this opportunity to. And in partnership with Sport Australia, and I've got to give a shout out to Darren Holder, who does some coach development work for them. We leveraged some of the content that he had done with the AFL, who are by nature very experienced in this mentoring space because of the way their coaching ladder structures up with multiple coaches and line coaches and everything like that. So we took some of the key topics from him and we put it out there to anyone that had gained a community coach accreditation in the last year. And we said, if you were interested in being part of this pilot, tell us why. Basically, it was a very open-ended process, like sell yourself. Why do you want to be involved? I didn't have the resources or the time to sit down and individually meet everyone. So if they were able to kind of sell themselves as to why they thought they would gain value from it, then we identified that we wanted to have 5 pods across the country, specifically because I'm always really conscious of, obviously, being based in Victoria as well. We have that time difference that can really be detrimental to WA. So we wanted to get a Western Australian time pod and one for Queensland, one for South Australia, and we had 2 that covered New South Wales and Victoria. Tassie have got a really strong program themselves that Nick Martin set up, so we just left them to it rather than try and take people from being involved in their own program. And we were lucky that we had over 80 applicants and we could only take 20 in the pilot just to, I guess, keep control and observation over it and make sure that we weren't biting off more than we could chew and that we were setting ourselves up for failure. So apologies to anyone that's listening that didn't make it. But yeah, I'm really happy with the 20 people that we did get.
Yep. So you're working on a bit of a ratio of about sort of 1-4, 1-5. So that mentor to mentee sort of ratio, is that about right? Like, do you feel like that's a manageable number for one person to be working with and not have like a massive drain on their time, but also give enough information that it's meaningful to them?
So the way we've set it up is it's not an exact science because a couple of groups have got 3 and one group's got 5 and we've had one person drop out and one person come in. It's definitely been manageable. The way we've set it up is that it's an 8-month window for the program, I suppose. And we've said that there should be 6 pod gatherings within those 8 months. And they were given, the mentors were given 6 topics to kind of use as, so not everyone doesn't just log into the Zoom and then sit there in silence, or it doesn't just descend into like a talk fest where you talk in circles or someone dominates the conversation. And then they all have ways of catching up outside of that. So I'm in one of the groups as like a control kind of thing, just to see from a long-term strategy perspective how it works. And they have a really thriving WhatsApp with couple of people from Victoria who are doing some incredible things. Like, you actually just I have the WhatsApp group muted, but I enjoy like checking in my WhatsApp and it's just like there's 30 messages and you just read back, and the people in that group are like their parents or coaching their daughter's team in this case, and they're just bouncing ideas off each other. And the whole idea behind it wasn't that when people talk about mentoring, they have this concept of it's like a Sermon on the Mount, and there's going to be someone that's going to come down from heaven and glow, and they've got all the answers and everything like that. And that's not what we, I guess, trained the mentors to be when we recruited them. It's what's called educative mentoring. They're there to support and challenge and give little breadcrumbs to lead and engender the conversation. The most common question that I know basketball, I know you told me the same, and I got asked when I was working in high performance at cricket, oh, what drills do you do with the state team? It's like, we do the same drills that you probably do with your under 8 team. We just change the constraints. We make it faster. We make it smaller distance, bigger distance. And everyone thinks that when you kind of walk into the state basketball center, you get handed this book of drills and like you're not allowed to leave the property with it and stuff. It's not like that. And that's what we wanted the mentors to kind of share, was that often the best answers that you can get aren't from looking at what the NBL and the WNBL coaches are doing. It's often if you look down the sideline to what the person on the other side is doing, whether they're successful or not successful, you can take both ways. If they're doing something and their team's struggling, then you go, all right, well, that's probably a behavior that I don't want to replicate. Or if they've done something that's really successful, or they've had a period of success within your division or your competition, look at them and go, well, what are they doing that's engendering this within their team or their club? And get those answers from people that are in the same situation as you. And whilst we don't want to stymie aspiration or make people not aspire to be more, we want them to be realistic about what their environment is and how they can best improve as a coach.
And I mean, the drill one is a really interesting topic in itself, because I think everyone's in the position where they want more drills, they want more drills, they want more drills, and we get it. Like, it's I was talking to a coach not too long ago that sort of said, look, can you just give me something where I'm going to be left alone for 45 minutes when I'm taking this training session? It's just going to keep them occupied, which is going to keep them out of my hair. It's not going to make them worse, and they're just going to enjoy it. And it's like, well, yeah, that's pretty much the crux of any drill that you want to use, essentially, is to make sure that you get that sort of stuff. And the advice I sort of gave was, well, look, reverse engineer your problems. Like, where are you having problems in games? Can you replicate that at your training session so that now you're teaching them without them realizing they're being taught it? And so it's working backwards, effectively, from what the actual problem is. Now, is it fun? Well, that's a question you're going to have to ask the kids, essentially. And you'll know straight away, I think, by looking at the kids' faces. Like, are they enjoying it? Are they smiling? Are they, you know, are they engaged with what's going on? I think is a really big part of it. But just because you run a drill and then I try and run the same drill doesn't mean we'll hit on the same points of emphasis, doesn't mean we'll teach it the same way. There might be something that you say that I don't that makes it better or worse depending on what's in there. Like, it was a coach that was out here not too long ago that I was talking to that sort of said, look, if you want my session plans, I'll just send them through to you. And it's like, well, okay, this is interesting. He's like, look, it's not what you teach, it's how you teach it. So it sort of reinforced the whole, look, it's not the drill that really makes or breaks you as the coach. It's, can you create an environment that's fun, that is learning, that is going to keep them engaged? I think that's probably the bigger thing. You can make up drills on the spot. That's, you know, I've joked about it previously on this, where it's like I ran the same drill for 60 minutes of an under 12 training session and they had no idea that it was the same drill, because we just changed something slightly. You know, we changed where the ball starts from or how many people were on defense, those types of things. Just manipulated a little bit. And I think that's something that coaches almost, it's a bit of a light bulb moment for them. It's like, oh, you can just do that and that will be the end result. It's like, yeah, just do that. Like, it's, you know, I've long had the, like, I think a lot of, in particular, parent coaches that have potentially played when they were a junior come in and they use the same drills that they used when they were a player because they still remember them, which usually consist of three-man weaves, turnouts, you know, the basics that I'm not particularly a fan of, but that's okay. Like, it's, you know, ball-in-hand stuff is all good in that space too. But it's a case of, well, okay, how can you change it to make it more modern? Like, can you throw a defender in there that's going to mess with it? Like, if you're three-player weaves, can you throw two defenders in there that are now trying to get deflections? There's ways that you can change it, and it's just thinking a little bit outside the box, I suppose, for a lot of coaches, that maybe just don't have the confidence to do it. Like they want something that they know will work rather than something that might mentally sort of stimulate and look a bit messy, but it's being okay with the mess.
Yeah.
I think is the big part.
100%. So it's the acronym that we use is FISH, so fun, inclusive, safe for the athletes and high intensity. And I think you don't have to just take the examples from the other coaches as well. You can look at other sports. So any invasion sport, you can take a drill that they're doing and put it into basketball. So whether that's soccer, AFL, anything like that, even fitness drills for tennis or anything like that, you can do because they're doing very similar lateral movements. The one thing that when coaches ask me about drills, sometimes you can over plan as well. And I was lucky. I obviously worked in academies in the soccer space in England, and we had a guest on Building Better Basketball a couple of weeks ago, Nick Cox, who's the academy director at Man United. So again, he's like Lono, he's forgotten more about developing soccer players than most of us will ever learn. And what he said was sometimes coaches just have to be really comfortable in the chaos as well of actually just letting a drill fall apart or letting a drill be really loosely based and seeing where the athletes take it. Because like you said, very quickly, if the drill gets to a point where they're not having fun, you'll see they'll stop moving, they'll start looking at you more. But if they're having fun and they're running around and you've set up a framework that they're operating in, that's when you can step back and go, right, well, how's Johnny like leading this session? Are they talking? Are they moving? Is someone picking someone else up? Or is it like just absolute free play? And then you can have those discussions afterwards where they actually feel that it hasn't been predicated on them what the outcomes are. They can go, well, this is what happened because of X, Y, and Z.
That makes a lot of sense. So when we look at the demographics of those that have been involved in the pilot, what are we to, is it fairly heavily skewed towards parents? Are there a number of volunteers that just coach that have no child involved? Like, what's it sort of look like?
Nah, it's probably about 75% of them are parents, which sits around what the national average of those community coaches are. We do have three late teenagers, early 20s kind of coaches that are possibly on that career coach ladder because they've realized that their playing career isn't going to go far beyond the junior playing that they had. And we've got a good mix of male and female as well, which was by design, obviously. We have two female mentors, Jackie from Victoria and Jay from South Australia. And then we have a good mix across all the groups of male and female, again, just to give that perspective as well. And one of the really pleasing things, I didn't look at this, but it's happened. We have a lot of dads that are coaching daughters as well. And I think from their point of view, a lot of the stuff that they've taken out of the discussions is how they've obviously, in their careers, they've spent a lot of time talking to male players. And they've kind of gone, how can I soften this message or how can I present it that's going to be more engaging to a group of teenage girls who have very different motivations to groups of teenage boys. And we have a range of abilities. We have people that are competing at more competitive junior levels right down to kind of real grassroots community, just literally the kind of enjoying the sport for the purity of the sport rather than the competition.
Yep, that makes sense. So what sort of topics have been discussed? Like you sort of touched on a little bit there, in particular coaching different genders or different demographics in general. What are some of the main themes that have come out of the discussion so far?
Yeah, so like I said, we tried to use the framework that we borrowed from Stubby in the AFL. So we wanted to start it to make sure it's that you know as well as I do, the most common question they get asked whenever you apply for a coaching role, one of your most recent podcasts, like, what's your vision? What's your philosophy? And it can be like screeds and screeds of pages, or it can just be one word or one sentence. And that was where we tried to start. The first session was that as an icebreaker. What are you? Who are you as a coach? Where do you want to be? What do you want your kind of North Star to be? And that obviously got them really thinking about, and that allowed the mentors to talk about different reasonings and different philosophies of different people, and what the kind of thought process they should put into determining that, and really owning it as themselves, and not just taking Ted. I did a presentation in Tasmania, and very quickly people kind of brought up Ted Lasso's philosophy of believe and stuff like that. And I guarantee in 2 years' time, when you ask the question, that will be people's, and they'll claim it as their own. Oh yeah,
as long as it's not Led Tato, we're all good. Like it's.
So that's where we started, and then the other sessions go on from there. So from your philosophy, we wanted to talk about how you build those relationships and guide learning within your team. So communication, for want of a better word, and then talking about environments, like what is the best environment for learning and skill development and enjoyment. So again, it can go a multitude of different ways. And then we do, there's no doubt we're really lucky in that the people that we have mentoring. So Jackie's obviously a state coach here in Victoria. Marcus played in America and is involved in your coaching programs as well. So these are people that not only know the art of coaching, but also the skill of coaching. So we do talk about coaching at a game, like what you should be doing on a game day, and then coaching at training and how they should interact and not be individual things, but should lead into and flow out of each other. And then the most important one, again, is with all of that, so your philosophy, your culture, the games, the trainings, how are you learning from them? How are you reflecting on them? How are you away from the mentors when you're driving home from practice or the game? How are you reflecting on that? How are you using all this information that you're getting to improve yourself? And often the mentors send me like little summaries of each meeting. And again, we set up those titles and a few dot points to help and like make sure the conversation doesn't drag and give everything some framework. But when you actually see the reports they send through, it goes in so many myriads of different ways, because people bring up their challenges and then the conversation starts. And it's whilst we really are comfortable with the coaching courses being online and accessible, because we're obviously getting the demand with like 15 coaches a day signing up for the community coaching course. And it's also helped lift the gender split as well. We've seen that more female coaches are keen to do it because they feel the courses are more accessible and that they're able to, the fear, I suppose, of being the only woman in the room at a coaching course has been lifted. By having less of that kind of face-to-face content sharing, you lose that kind of community of basketball coaching or sport coaching, any kind of coaching. So that's why these learning together and the mentoring sessions, we're really keen for them just to feel like they're no man is an island kind of thing. They have that recognition that their problem is also someone else's problem. And because we have, I'm pretty sure that none of the actual mentees knew each other before the program. So they go, oh, yep, okay, well, I feel better about my problem now because I know it's someone else's problem as well.
Yeah, it's interesting you talk about like the shift to online in particular, and I think it kind of came about a little bit through COVID, and we didn't really have a choice for a while there that we had to move courses online. Victoria is probably a little different to a lot of the other states in that we do still have a face-to-face component of that community coaching course, and I know like it's someone that delivers a lot of those. That's a two-hour hit of some basic skills drills. Like if there was anything that you weren't sure of in the online, you can ask the question. I don't think once I've been out of there inside 2 hours. Like by the time you deliver the content, you open up for questions and those types of things. And it's, I think it's the same at every course, regardless of basketball, whatever other sport and those types of things. You ask, are there any questions? Everyone sort of sits there mute. You start to pack things up and then you have a line of about eight people that are all just, oh, I didn't want to ask this in front of everyone else. But these type of environments do allow you to do that. And I think it takes a lot of the stigma of, oh, this might be a bad question or a dumb question, or this is a problem that's really unique to me and I don't know how to ask it. If you're experiencing it, you can nearly put your house on the fact that someone else is experiencing it somewhere else as well. So this mentoring side of things, I think, is a really valuable part, because it's not as simple as here's your off-the-shelf answer. Like, there will be a part of that for sure, but there are always these little bits of tangents that come in and it's like, well, that bit of information is different to what it would be because you're dealing with under 12s versus under 18s, those types of things. And that's a big part of it, I feel like, is that you want a specific answer to a specific question. You don't want the vagueness of what can sometimes be with online learning. It's like, well, this is what should happen. It's like, well, that, yes, that's what should happen, but there's always a tangent that comes off of that too. So the ability to talk to someone about it is a really valuable part. And I'm just kind of curious, what's the, how much is it a specific question looking for an answer versus just needing a little bit of, like, almost grief counseling in their role as a coach?
I think it's somewhere in between. A lot of it is, it's almost like the old wanting the opportunity to throw something against the wall and see what sticks and what doesn't. And that safe space where you can say, this is my problem. Here are some ideas I have to solve it. Am I on the right track? Am I, like, will none of this work, kind of thing? So it's actually just the, like you said, the lack of fear of someone going, oh, geez, what's that person doing here? That's a stupid question. They should maybe, like, just be coaching Aussie hoops or something like that. Not that there's anything wrong with coaching Aussie hoops.
We need those coaches.
Point that out. If anything, there's a school of thought that our best coaches should be coaching Aussie hoops. What the main kind of forums that have come up have been either, this is a problem I have, this is how I'm going to solve it. Does anyone see what are the things that could go wrong here from your experience? Have you tried this, etc.? So forearmed is forewarned as to what you're going into. Although in some cases it's a bit of game review support as well, because obviously these are community coaching courses who often only have other parents watching the games, who obviously are approaching it with their own agenda based off the performance of their children. So they have no assistant coach or anything like that to bounce ideas off, get that support that Zoe and the guys talk about so often, of the value of having those other voices in the room. And ultimately that is, as a parent myself, that's the topic that things always come back to in these discussions, is managing those relationships with the parents.
Yeah, and that's where I was going to head to next. Like, how many questions, I suppose, have come after a bit of conflict? Like, it's not so much that ability to be proactive with it. You almost have to be reactive and say, this is the situation that's happened. How can I deal with this? Like, is that what the sort of the WhatsApp group and the chats are for? Because that's instantaneous messaging back versus waiting for a group session, so to speak.
So we actually had a situation in the Queensland group where one of the coaches who was in the mentoring, her team actually fell apart mid-season through no fault of her own, from my understanding, talking to the mentor. They had a couple of issues with parents who had issues with the club, not with the coach. And I think it was around, like, what grade their kids had been put in and she was coaching them. So her team actually fell apart through nothing that she had done wrong as a coach. I think they were maybe running along at 500 record or something like that. She's thankfully, the club worked with her, recognized she was a good coach and have found her space as an assistant coach with another team. And she's actually thriving and really enjoying it. But again, that kind of shows the problems that can be generated through no fault of your own, as just someone that's trying to create the best environment and work your coaching philosophy in with these kids that's fun and everything like that. A lot of the, within the WhatsApps, a lot of the kind of, again, similar to what I was talking about for that immediate feedback, especially one of the things I've seen a lot of is like training plan feedback. So this didn't work, or very quickly the players turned around and went, oh, this is boring. And it was like, coaches go, oh, well, I could add this in or I could add this in. So it's that support to go, yep, that's a great idea. Have a crack at that. Or maybe here's, and that's where we're lucky that the partnership with the Mojo apps really helped as well, because we're able to direct them to within the app the skill sets that they're wanting to work on, whether that's dribbling, passing, rebounding, and go, well, there's 74 videos there. I guarantee one of them will be a drill you haven't done before. And sometimes a change is good as a rest. It might not even hit the same outcome that you want to achieve, but it covers a number of the same topics. And the art of coaching will be that you can take away the learnings that you get from that drill to achieve your objective.
Yep. So what from your experience so far has been like the outcomes that have worked exceptionally well, or the things that have worked really well within this program?
I think we've been really lucky that the coaches that have put their hands up, and it's important for me to note the success of this program isn't going to be based on the mentors. The mentees will be asked, they'll be asked a number of questions, but the main question that we will review with Sport Australia is, how has being part of the mentor program improved you as a coach? And we're really realistic that an 8-month sprint is not going to change lifelong behavior. So option one will be, it's given me some great ideas that I'm going to be able to go away and think about. Option two will be, it's given me some ideas that I've immediately incorporated in my coaching and supported my development. Option three is probably the outlier, which will be, this has totally turned my coaching career around. I'm a brand new coach after having been part of this. I think we'll have the majority that will be in the first or second bucket. And I think that's all we can really hope for within this. What I'd like is that when we expand it in further years with Sport Australia, that we're able to take some of the people that are mentees now and turn them into mentors of the future. As I touched on, like with you before we started recording, our mentor in WA founded the club, has never coached outside of that club, but started the club, has built it up into one of the biggest junior clubs in WA. And he is an expert in that space of junior club basketball coaching, has no aspirations to go above. And that's what, like the FTEM model, Foundation Talent Elite Mastery, like we want expert coaches at each level, because they're the people that can have the biggest difference to not only the players, but also the coaches at that level, because they've seen everything before and they have that passion for the development of the players at that level. So ultimately, that's kind of where I want it to get to. And we'll see what the coaches' feedback on that is. I guess the most pleasant thing is that they're still all attending their pods that have signed up. They are still all giving their kind of monthly touch-ins with their mentors and engaged within the group. And the ultimate risk was that ultimately we were doing a blind date of 20 people with 5 people. And I'm amazed that the person that dropped out didn't drop out because they had an issue with the mentor. They dropped out because of life situations, which is totally understandable. And I'm honestly surprised there's only been one of them. But we've been really lucky that we've managed to pair 3 or 4 people with a person that they might not like, but they at least respect and want to continue to hear from them for the duration of the pilot. And that's ultimately the risk when you're doing this blind date thing. And we're lucky in that we talked to yourself and your colleagues about the mentors and said, do you think this person would be good? And they've all been excellent. So hopefully they all agree to continue, and then we can continue to develop and expand it.
Yeah, I think that's a big thing, is the mentor has to be the right sort of person. They're not bringing a complex solution to a really simple problem. And that's part of the battle, I suppose, is that you can go too high up the chain and you can get a really complex solution to something that can just be changed with, hey, just have less people in your lines at training sessions and that can actually solve your problems for you straight away. It's those types of things. It's the hands-on experience, I suppose, is the really big thing. You don't necessarily need Sandy Brondell or Brian Gorgian to tell you what is a good drill. Always helps. But they're not necessarily the person that deals with 8, 7-year-olds that are going to be at your training session, which, you know, we know is like herding cats. Like, that could be a completely different issue altogether. Are there any areas, I suppose, out of this that has highlighted the need for additional work in this the coaching space?
I think the first one is constantly just providing reassurance to coaches that parents are a problem in every sport and a problem for everyone, and that you shouldn't let them destroy like the love of what you're doing. And it's just that constant kind of providing that context and changing the attitudes of parents as well. And that's a job for every NSO and SSO to keep. It's the same as referee respect. Comes down to coaches' respect kind of thing as well. It's obviously you don't see it because it happens with like the little text messages or the phone calls after training, or the snide comment as they're leaving going, oh, you did really well in your 8 minutes on the court tonight, Johnny, that kind of thing. So I think that's something that has constantly obviously come up through discussions with parents and managing relationships. In terms of actual content, I think all it has reinforced to me is, one, there's a demand for this and how we facilitate that and how we can create those experts at each level. And we're trying to do that within the eTrainU system, where we have the resource library, where we've got the traditional coaching pathway and the courses, but we have this resource library that's free, that open access. You can get content that is for every level, regardless of what teams you're coaching. And I think it reinforces to us the need to continue to provide content that covers basically those six areas that I touched about, the vision, the philosophy, relationships, environment, and then the game and match day coaching. And also making it, and one of the takeaways that we'll have out of this is starting to highlight those behaviors at that level, because like you say, it's very easy to get, and we're very lucky that we have coaches like Gorge that are so accessible and so open and so comfortable talking about what their actions and their philosophies are. And you have the wonderful people that share this table with you, like, that talk about, like, Zoe's review of the World Cup last week. Like, you could take out the word World Cup and subtract in National Championship, Junior Championship, Club Championship, and you'd be having those same reactions, just on a smaller scale, of people putting things on a club notice board or messages in a parent's WhatsApp group or something like that. And it's about making, whilst highlighting the access and the clicks that we get from the word Brian Gorgian or David Herbert or someone like that, going, well, Neil Gray coaching Knox Raiders under 14s, this is how he kind of managed his interactions with his parents to be really successful, and highlighting those stories and making them accessible and understandable for everyone to, like I say, ultimately highlight that your problems are not your problems alone. It's very rare that you will be able to find a unique problem to yourself that someone else in this fantastic wide country doesn't already have.
Well, it's amazing. Well, obviously, we are running a lot of coaching courses at the moment with mandatory accreditation coming in for those representative levels of coaching. So consequently, I don't have a lot of weekends spare because I am presenting courses. And it's amazing how often the facilitated discussion is actually the big key to a lot of that course. Is you'll throw a question out there and it's not necessarily me giving the answer, but it's four or five other people in the room giving their perspective on it. And it is reassuring that it's like, okay, one, we're hitting the mark with the content we're delivering here because it is relevant content. If it's hitting on five or six people out of the 16 that are in the room, we're good. Like, it's a pretty good strike rate. But there is also that other side of things, is that I think as a facilitator at times I can be a little bit removed, because I'm not actually coaching someone this season. I'm deliberately took some time away from it. I can forget the problems that go on out in domestic world or representative world or those types of things too. And it's kind of refreshing in a lot of ways to sort of be regrounded, I suppose, as to what does go on out there, because we do forget about it. It's, you know, we joke about it a lot. You know, we're not just dealing as coaches with the problems in front of us, which are going on the court. We're dealing with the problems potentially behind us, which is the parent group. And how do we keep them engaged and active and supportive in that space? Because there's only so much we can control. Like, we could give one child 40 minutes of game time and the parent would say, hey, that's maybe a little bit too much. We'd give them 38 and they say, hey, that's not quite enough. They need to be somewhere in between. It's like, hey, we're not Goldilocks. Like, we can't just find the perfect porridge for everyone. Like, it is such a unique perspective that we tend to not have to manage just the 8 kids, but also potentially 16 to 24 when you add in parents as well, and depending on the family situation, might be more or less. So for coaches as well, the idea of coaching is a great one, and you're giving back and you're being involved as part of the community and you're a volunteer, but it is also so difficult because you've got so many balls in the air, so to speak, that you're just trying to juggle to keep everyone happy, engaged and content. Just the ability to have someone that you can touch in with in terms of support, I think, is a really valuable side of it. And I obviously do a fair bit of coach mentoring, both formally and informally. So there are people that I catch up with for designated times that we go and discuss some things on. And there are others that I may not hear from for like 3 months, and I get a random text message just like, hey, what about this? And it's like, oh, well, here's my take on it, but, you know, take it or leave it, essentially. But I think that's probably an area where I don't think we've done a fantastic job as a sport, and that's Basketball Victoria included in all of that. We've never really touched on how important the use of a coach developer and mentor can be in that space. It's just knowing that there will be someone at the end of the phone that can say, hey, try this, or have you thought about this, or maybe change that. I think that's a really valuable part of it, and I think it's something that we'll look at once we've sort of got through the mandatory accreditation slog for this next 6 months or so. We can actually do a little bit more of that, and we can have a little bit more tailored training, I think, for coaches, because I think that will actually help us keep a lot of coaches in the sport. I was talking to a parent not too long ago, actually, whose child I coached in under 12s and has just aged out of under 18s. They said for the first 2 weeks after they'd aged out, they had this real sense of, oh, thank God, like, we don't have to go here, there, or do whatever it is. Then sort of like weeks 3 and 4, it's like, actually, we really miss this. Like, we miss the social connection of basketball, going somewhere and caring about a result. They're like, yeah, AFL team sucks, so we don't even want to follow them. But it was that kind of thing. Is they actually really miss it. And it's like, well, that's someone that potentially has 8 to 10 years worth of basketball experience that could actually be a really valuable coach that we haven't engaged with, that we could have brought back into the sport as a coach. It's like, well, you've seen a lot. How about you go back in and coach?
Yeah.
And they're the ones that we kind of miss.
And I think I was just thinking there as well. So what a mentor looks like can be very different, and coach, developer, mentor, whatever title you want to put on it. From my personal point of view, one of the people that I speak to the most about coaching is actually a player that I previously coached at state level, and they've now retired and they're working. It's still working in the sport, but not in a coaching capacity or a playing capacity. And I actually go, because I coach them and they've seen my behaviors and my actions and they know how I coach, if I have an issue coaching a totally different gender, I can go to them and go, well, this is my problem. This is what I want to do. How do you think that will be received? Or send them a video of something and go, this is what I'm seeing. What are you seeing? And they're not coaching. They're not even playing anymore. But they're someone that has, like you said, got that knowledge through a period spent in the game, that whose opinion you respect or value, that can give you all the things that we've talked about, that reassurance, that challenging, that alternative perspective, that kind of just gives you that confidence to move through the process of decision making.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a side of the coaching development, I think, that we're only just sort of scratching the surface with, but I think it'll be probably the most valuable part of it moving forward. It's going to be a fairly lengthy project, I would suggest. Is that what's next for this program? Is to, like, how do you make it bigger, essentially?
Yeah, 100%. So we'll review it with Sport Australia in December based off the 5 and 20 model that we have. And obviously in 2024, we don't want to go backwards from that. We want to see how we can move forwards from that. And we, again, won't walk before we can run, because the worst thing would be that we bite off more than we can chew and the whole thing falls over. And the idea as well, it's kind of like a replication. So the 20 coaches that we have within the program this year hopefully go back into their community and they pass on that information to other coaches within their clubs or within their sphere of influence. So we then have 20 ambassadors out there doing coach mentoring. And what we want is to continue to meet the need and the demand and provide the different, I think we're comfortable with the content and the framework. We just need to continue to expand the opportunities for these people to connect. And at the minute, they're only connecting within their pods. How can we advance it to connecting with each other within the whole program and how that looks like? What forum can we create for that? We don't want to create this massive Facebook group where people just become nameless. So what ways can we, and one of the things that we've kind of toyed with to finish the month is that the mentors will actually switch pods and do a little kind of review of the year, and that will help the mentors give some feedback to the other mentors as well about what they've kind of taken from their groups as well, and we can see the growth that each mentee's had. And yeah, ultimately we'll look at the categories that we want to offer it to. So like I said, we were really specific because we wanted a control group that were coming from exactly the same environment, which was 1 year recent community coaches. And that is where the majority of new coaches are. But we're conscious of the fact that that's 1 year and a one. So how can we open this out to coaches that are in year four of their 8 year lifespan and might need it actually more than someone that's new, who's fresh and full of ideas and hasn't been ground down by the man? Maybe this is the pep that they need to get them through the next 4 years or keep them coaching in the game. So these are all different things that we have to look at. And like I said, we're really lucky that Nick and Tazzy's got a strong program as well that works on a yearly cycle. So we'll have a chat with him about the learnings that they've had as well and try and push it out a bit further. And again, if there is someone that is really interested in being involved and has heard something that's kind of really moved the needle for them, please reach out. And if there's a club and or an association that's listening that's gone, oh, well, I think we could do that, then I'm happy for them to reach out to you. And like, we don't, again, same as the drill book, we're not going to sit on this and keep it behind lock and key, the SBC. I'm happy to share the curriculum and the content with people. And if they want to have a crack at doing it themselves, like, people will walk away if they don't enjoy it. So there's not much that can go wrong.
Yeah. And I think that's a really valuable part of it, is that talking to a director of coaching the other day, just sort of checking in and saying, look, how's it been going for you? And he's like, look, I just feel like I'm a constant complaints department. So that's someone that's ahead of a VJBL representative program. And their point was, all I deal with is putting out fires. I don't actually get to go and help the coaches with dealing with what they're doing. I don't get to sit and watch their training session or watch their game and give them some feedback, because they're just putting out fires all over the place. So even associations, that if you're looking at your coaching structure and to what it might look like, do you need a director of coaching? Probably. Or a coaching coordinator. In fact, absolutely you do. But can you have some roles that sit underneath that, that maybe are coaches that don't want to commit the time to coaching a whole season but still want to be invested in the game, that you can bring back in occasionally? It's like, hey, can you just go and help that coach out over there? Or can you go and do something with them? Can you just watch their training session? Can you take this drill for them during this, because that's an area of specialty for that? I think that's it's a little bit of a gap, so to speak, in the market of, well, how can we continue to engage people so they don't completely walk away from the sport, but also how can we better use the resources we have available to us? And I think that's that will go a long way towards keeping a lot of coaches in the sport, for mine.
If there's one thing our brothers and sisters in the officiating department do really well, it's probably that ref coaching, ref observation part of it that I think has real value for them, and keeping referees and officials in the game against all the other issues they have forcing them out of the game.
Well, it's an interesting part of it because I was having this discussion. I can't even think who it was. I was talking to someone the other day about officials effectively and how they have referee coaches that watch the game. And we were talking about, well, is there better value in not having them evaluate the game from the stands, but actually having them ref the game with the other official? Like, are you getting more out of it? Like, now you work with someone, you see the areas that they may need to fix up. And I suppose this could be something similar from the coach mentoring side of things. Do you need to sit on a bench with someone to really get the inner workings and the nuts and bolts of it all? Maybe every now and again, but how regularly do you do that? If you're going to do that every second week, well, you may as well just be their assistant. So there needs to be some separation in there somewhere where you get enough clean air, I suppose, to come in with a fresh perspective. And that's not easy to do, obviously, but that's an area we can at least look at.
You see it in the AFL, that's their head coach's main mentoring kind of avenue is that they get someone to sit behind them in the box and basically just review what they're saying and then break it down with them afterwards. So I think that speaks a lot to behaviours and communication and everything like that. There's value in both models, I think, as well, because especially with referee coaching, they can watch what's going on in the game, but because they're watching multiple referees and they obviously can't hear what their refs are saying, you lose that aspect of it a little bit. So I think, like I said, there's so many different ways this model could be shaped. Like it's a rectangle and you can move the sides up and down to make different shapes. And like I said, I don't think it would be very hard to stuff it up, because if you get a bad mentor, then the mentees will walk away and you'll know that it didn't work. If you have a bad mentee, then you can just ask them, just say, look, I don't think you fully grasped the concept of this program. We'll work with you individually on finding a solution for you.
Yep, that makes sense. Is there anything else I haven't touched on that you wanted to hit on before we wrap this up?
No, I think I've got my little notepad in front of me and we ticked everything off. That's so good
always
job,
a win.
Rob.
Always a win. Hey, sometimes being unprepared is just prepared enough. Like but big thanks for jumping into the podcast. It's certainly appreciated. The heating hasn't been too bad for this one, so I don't know how we've swung that. We might have gone full Glasgow temperatures just to make it easy for you. But obviously you can listen to the Building Better podcast everywhere that you find good podcasts, I'm going to assume.
Yeah.
It'll be in the same places that you can find the Talking Split podcast. So, Neil Gray, thanks very much for jumping in. Coaches out there, we will catch you all next week on the Talking Split podcast. Look, tune in, enjoy the tribe.